I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the cause of dying. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the heart of God. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. One of the really gifted people I know in the movement in Canada is my friend Joe Thauberger in Regina, Saskatchewan, and he wrote something very interesting today, and always very thoughtful. He writes, "He who controls the past controls both the present and the future. All of our present behaviors are greatly influenced by our ideas about what was good and bad in our past history. Most people are totally unaware that even our modern conservatives have adopted a Marxist worldview. All civilizations in history, including our own, grew out of societies characterized by assertive mating within fairly rigid class distinctions, aided by a prevalence of racism and ethnocentrism." And you only have to read the Eysenck's The Inequality of Man or E.O. Wilson's On Human Nature. Wilson is the Harvard professor of entomology who invented the science of sociobiology, or Reed Jensen and Robert Schockley. This led to an upper class that was much more intelligent than the lower classes, since the lower classes tended to die more often. And it was this upper class that was largely responsible for an average increase in intelligence for the whole society. It was this increased intelligence that invented most of the civilization. Added to that was the prevalence of religion. No civilization in history was ever created by atheists. The past 400 years and more of European history has seen the development of many different kinds of socialism. For instance, the Hutterites were about as communistic as you can get as were some nuns, priests, and brothers in the Catholic Church, and others in the Protestant, and often others in the Protestant Church. And for the most part, their communism was mostly voluntary and did work quite well, because they were governed by fundamental Christian beliefs, unlike the atheistic Marxists and other secularists. And 100 or 200 years ago, almost everybody except the Marxists accepted the idea that there are enormous differences in racial and ethnic intelligences. For instance, the Ashkenazi Jews, as distinct from the Sephardi, seem to be the most intelligent, which is partly why they've taken over so much of Western society, aided by their predatory religious beliefs and the gullible Europeans of lesser intelligence. Next in line are the Japanese and the Northwest Europeans, which is why most of us speak English, even though most of us of our great-grandparents did not. Today, if anyone suggests that there are very significant differences in racial intelligence, he's regarded as some kind of evil monster. And it's precisely the prevalence of social Marxism that is the main cause for the decline and imminent destruction of Western civilization. How many of you remember the two-hour CBC documentary from 1998, I think, called Hollywoodism, how the Jews took control of Hollywood? It was about Jews and the movies they made beginning in the 20s and the American Dream. In it, they showed exactly how the Jews took over Hollywood and made North America into the best society in the entire world, the state, believe it or not. Hollywoodism is the new religion of North America. The theme, few of us are aware that the German socialism, that was national socialism, was characteristically defined by Volksgemeinschaft, or people's community. Most people are totally unaware that nobody would ever graduate from the SS Junkerschulen without a thorough understanding of the paramount importance of this philosophy of Volksgemeinschaft, or people, community, community. And he suggests that people consult the books by Hans Schmidt. Today, not one person in a thousand is aware that Volksgemeinschaft was by far the single most important concept in the philosophy of the National Socialist German Workers' Party. When he only contrasts the German economy with the Stalinist Soviet economy to get the full flavor of the gigantic inefficiency of the Marxist system during this time, from 33 to 39. Let me add that anyone who doesn't know that Stalin, actually born Djugashvili, was an atheistic apostate Christian of Georgian origin, and that Bronstein, Lev Davidovich Bronstein, or Trotsky, was an atheistic Jew, really should not be participating in this discussion. One of my favorite quotations is from Socrates. Awareness of ignorance is the beginning of wisdom. So in other words, the awareness that you don't know everything. That's a kind of a good point by Joe Thauberger. In our quest to inform and educate others, we should spend at least as much time recognizing our own shortcomings and limitations, and also in educating ourselves. In my old age, I've come to accept much of Henrik Ibsen's idea that each man's life is built on a philosophical illusion regarding the purpose and meaning of life. Our primary task in life is not to discover the total truth, but to find those sets of fictional beliefs that create the greatest good for the greatest number, or something close to that. I certainly do not wish to disparage or diminish the importance of seeking the truth, but simply to recognize that there are other philosophical ideas and social customs which are important to the survival of our civilization. Ethology, the study of human types, is very relevant to human existence, but receives very little attention. Beavers and muskrats operate much the same ecological niches, but have extremely different reproductive behaviors. I think we could do much to shed some of our muskrat behaviors and become more like the beavers. Beavers mate for life and are very nurturing of their young. Muskrats have big families, but maybe not such great parents. The primary task of the politician is to bring all human activity into accord with the laws of nature. And the Marxists are about as far away as one can get. Mythology tries to work out the laws of human behavior. I've actually published a short study called Sociology Blueprint for Survival. I did it a number of years ago. I think it's still quite helpful. Anybody who'd like a copy can email me at paul@paulfromm.com. I'll tell you how you can get it. It's the price, the cost is very, very nominal. But in it, I argue that man has certain inbred genetic behaviors or instincts. Genetics is not simply about physical appearances, you know, the curly hair or long hair, blonde hair or red hair, or being tall or short, or etc. But there are also behaviors, and one of them is the inclination for territory. We want territory or property. Hence, communism, which eschews the private ownership of property, is doomed as a system. It misreads human nature. We have a preference for our own. Hence, anti-racism is doomed. Groups will prefer their own, will gravitate to their own. No point passing anti-racism laws or criminalizing the expression of criticism of other groups. Groups will always prefer their own and prefer their own for their own land. Hence, the immigration and the mass immigration experiment beginning in 1965 in Canada, the United States, and a year later in Australia, the goal of which was to replace the European founding settler people. It is doomed to catastrophe. It might indeed succeed, but only in absolute wreckage of the original society. A good friend, Al Romanchuk, he's a lawyer in Kelowna, British Columbia. He was a lawyer for many years in Edmonton, and he was for a while the mayor of Grand Prairie up in north central Alberta. And he's a very opinionated, definite gentleman of 81 years, as he's always happy to tell people. And he has a couple of questions for our newly elected conservative leader federally, Andrew Scheer, who hopes to replace the trust fund kid or Justin Trudeau in the next election. And this is what Al says, and I think these questions are very valid. He says to Andrew Scheer, good afternoon, Mr. Scheer. You're seeking to form a government, and if you form that government, will you have the courage, A, to reinstate the death penalty for murder, and B, repeal the hate speech provisions of Section 319 of the Criminal Code? I would argue or quickly suggest that those are not the only reforms we need, but they certainly are important ones. A good challenge. Well, here are two absolutely drive you off the wall stories. Having to do with our symbols and the growing repression that we face in Canada. This is a broadcast I did yesterday with Ryan Rue, and it's called Man Fired for Holding Up Confederate Flag and Other Politically Correct Craziness.
This is October 11th, 2017. In this video, we're going to talk about a man who got fired from his job for holding up the Confederate flag and other political craziness. My guest is Paul Fromm. He's the director of the Canadian Association for Freedom of Expression. So, Paul, tell us whose feelings have been hurt this time.
Brian, I have a lot of interest in the Red Guard movement in China, at the height of the of the Cultural Revolution. And what Mao did back then was he turned these young people loose as fanatics, and they would suddenly denounce long-time party members or important people or even professors as capitalist rotors or counter-revolutionaries, and then they would publicly humiliate them, put them on a trial before a people's court. They put a dunce cap on their head and hang a sign on with their crimes lettered in Chinese, and sometimes abuse them, slap them around, and if they weren't executed, they'd be sent off to labor camp. Well, and at that time, the revolution basically was eating its own. You know, long-time cadres, old comrades who'd been with Mao since the 30s, were suddenly denounced as CIA agents and so on. We are in a state pretty close to that, the political correctness. On August, August the 21st, Hamilton construction worker named Keith Lipiak put a Confederate flag on his pickup truck. And I think that got, that was up on Facebook, I believe. And he worked for an outfit called Yoke, Y-O-K-E Group. And they were at the Hamilton's historic Treble Hall in downtown. Anyway, he was fired. He was fired.
Just for that?
Confederate flag. Yeah, and this is what Yoke Group owner Anthony Quattro Chiocci told CBC News. He said, "I have absolutely zero tolerance for this behavior. He will no longer be working for Yoke Group." And he said the Yoke Group believes strongly in diversity, inclusiveness, and acceptance. There's zero tolerance for racism and discrimination in our business and on our sites. We're deeply offended by the action of the rogue temporary employee at our Treble Hall site today. We do not condone or support this individual's actions. We encourage freedom of speech, but not when it evokes any form of hatred or discrimination.
But it's just a Confederate flag. That's his freedom of speech.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder, is this guy reading from a text that he doesn't even understand what he's saying? He said, the guy is fired for displaying the Confederate flag. And listen to them. "I have absolutely no tolerance for this behavior." You mean, flying a Confederate flag. What if he showed up to work in a Che Guevara t-shirt? You see lots of those around.
Okay. That's okay. That's fine.
He says the Yoke Group believes strongly in diversity, inclusiveness, and acceptance. Well, not including this guy, and they don't want diversity of opinion, and they don't accept him. I mean, you wonder, have people just unplugged their brains? They're just saying things and they don't see that there's an actual fidelity? And then, you know, the final kick in the head, there's no zero tolerance for racism and discrimination. The guy's not discriminating, he has a flag. Racism, well, that's open to interpretation. Yeah. A lot of proud Southerners are proud of their history.
Yeah, they're not necessarily racist. Just the term is so loaded.
Yeah, and there's tremendous bravery shown by the rebel soldiers. I mean, General Robert E. Lee was probably one of the great military tacticians of all of history, and the Confederate troops were man for man far better than the Union troops. Many of them were extremely good shots and showed tremendous bravery. Anyway, the flag doesn't say, "I hate this group" or "I hate that group."
No, it's too vague,
just a flag. And so he said, "We were deeply offended." Why would you be offended by some guy having a flag?
This is Canada, it's not the United States.
It's not North Korea. And then he ends up with, we do not condone or support this individual's actions, but I don't think anybody was asking them to condone them. And then he almost to add insult to injury, he said, we encourage freedom of speech, but not when it evokes any form of hatred or discrimination. Well, the Confederate flag, it hates anybody, and it's not advocating discrimination, and it's just a flag. You know, whenever somebody says, "I'm for freedom of speech, but,"
yeah,
they're not. If I'm for freedom of speech, as long as you say something like, go Tiger Cats, or hey Blue Jays, or something like that. As long as it's something stupid and bland, okay. But the minute it gets on any sort of sense of territory, you shut up, in fact, you're fired. You know, when I think of this poor fellow, Lipiec, the guy who was fired, you know, I think, you know, here's a working stiff who, for whatever reason, and here's a picture of him on the CBC, he's a guy with big black working, you know, construction boots. And the guy got absolutely nuked.
Yeah. Now,
I could understand.
So isolating, demonizing.
Yeah, I could understand if they said, well, okay, we don't want any controversial things on the job site. And tell them, you know, take your flag, put it in your pocket.
Yeah, and take the flag down. That's enough.
On the job site. This is just absolutely outrageous what has happened to this poor fellow. I actually found this story while looking at another story that was brought to my attention. And, you know, I warned back in the early 90s, and I mean, I don't want to suggest that I'm a prophet, but in a sense, I've got it right. I said that multiculturalism was going to cost us basic freedoms, including freedom of speech. Now, that was one of my sins, one of my crimes that the Peel District School Board accused me of, and which eventually, some years later, led to my firing. I was told I must not repeat comments like that. I thought, well, that's what I believe. And I really wish I was wrong. I mean, I really
you've been at this for 50 years, so even then you had enough experience to see it coming, so you're right, Paul.
Well, just recently, there was an incident in Highland Creek, at the Highland Creek Festival in Toronto.
Okay.
And what happened was that they had a replica of General Lee. That's the customized Dodge Charger from the Dukes of Hazzard show, remember?
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Now, the vehicle was displaying two Confederate flags, one on its roof and one on its bumper. Now, some Negress, immigrant, you know, I said, multiculturalism is going to cost us our freedoms, all of these law freedoms. Anyway, this woman, by the name of, I had it here a moment ago. She's an immigrant of some sort. And her name is Anderson. Well, that doesn't sound like, but there's a picture of her, and she's black, and she's African, and her name is Ibia, Y-B-I-A, Ibia Anderson. But she had a three-year-old boy, and they were at this festival, and saw a replica of the Dukes of Hazzard's Dodge Charger called General Lee. Well, she asked that they remove the car. Talk about uppity arrogance.
Well, is it because, were her feelings hurt? Was that the reason? Because of her feelings?
Well, I guess so. Well, let me tell you what I want. I want the car gone. I want it out of sight. It does not belong here. It's representing lynching and death of black people. What, the car? The Dukes of Hazzard, the show, had nothing to do with lynchings or the deaths of black people or anything like that.
Yeah.
And imagine how uppity. Can you imagine me going to wherever she's from, let's say Nigeria, and they've got some folk festival there, and I don't like something, and I say, you've got to remove this. They probably tell me to shove off if that's all they told me.
It's, well, minority privilege.
Minority privilege. It gets even better. About a week ago, a person by the name of Shan, S-H-A-N, he is a city councilor for an area of Scarborough. His name is Nathan Shan, and I'm pretty sure he's a Tamil. He's very dark. Anyway, but he's going to make a motion to city council for staff to do a report to how they can ban the Confederate flag in Toronto. Anyway, I won't read this exactly. Toronto's council is set to discuss a call for a ban on the Confederate flag in public spaces stemming from a confrontation at this festival caused by the Negroes. Constable Nathan Shan, of Ward 42 in Scarborough, introduced a motion that aims to clarify what symbols can be displayed during events in parks and other public places. He's also calling for an outright ban of the Confederate flag, in particular from city-owned spaces and at city-sponsored events. So, on property that belongs to all taxpayers, he would not want the battle flag of the Confederacy. He's a Tamil. I wonder if he would like if he would still permit the flag of the Tamil Tigers, which was a terrorist movement in Ceylon, which was supported by many Tamils in Toronto. You know, this shut them out, shut them down, fire them. It's getting crazy.
Yeah. I think it's working against them, you know. It's just giving more sympathy to the right.
I sure hope so. Christy Blatchford, I know her slightly, and I like her. She's a court reporter, National Post. And she's one of the best court, probably the best court reporter in Canada. But she had an item in the National Post today, October the 11th, that's actually not about courts. It's about the Board of Education. And get this. If there were any doubt, there is no more. Canada is the stupidest country ever, she said. The evidence already around is now irrefutable. The Toronto District School Board and its efforts to remain ahead of the Ontario government curve on all gender, cultural, political sensitivities is not only contending itself with following Education Minister Mitzi Hunter, she's black, a directive on earlier this year to review all potential Indigenous, that's Indian, Native Indian, anything that might be offensive to them in terms of teams, names, and mascots. But now what they're doing, the board is now removing the title chief from various executive offices. So you're no longer be the chief financial officer, it'll be the financial officer, or the chief superintendent, it'll be superintendent.
Well, is that going to hurt the feelings of the Indigenous people?
God knows. That's the head of a group or a tribe. It's not derogatory. In fact, it's honoring. It's like the leader. But somebody might take offense. So I think they've got a consultant or a director for Indigenous affairs. These guys pull in obscene salaries, and of course they have assistants and secretaries, and you wonder what the heck does that office do? If it's busily changing names and so on, what does that have to do with teaching kids reading, writing, computer skills, history, and so on?
Good point.
This is madness. I'll end with one further bit of madness. Now, I don't know whether to giggle at this or to cry. Michael Morris is as a longtime professor at the University of Toronto, and he made his name in writing about the Holocaust. So he's a Holocaust propagandist. So you've got to understand that Michael Morris is a Jew, and he certainly paid his dues to the anti-racism cause. Well,
yeah.
Recently, he got ambushed. He was at a lunch at Massey College. Massey College is affiliated with the University of Toronto, and Professor Morris is Professor Emeritus, so they give him an office there, and he has a title and so on. So he was sitting down to lunch with a couple of members of the college, and Hugh Siegel, who's also Jewish, and he's the master, but he no longer calls himself a master. That's like principal of the college. And what Morris said to a black person at the table was this. As Hugh Siegel, the master, or actually the principal of the college, joined them, he said, "You know, this is your master. Do you feel the lash?"
Okay. Uh-oh.
it's not that funny a joke. I mean, it's not really all that witty, but come on. Anyway, all hell broke loose.
Wow.
The Negro went viral on the internet. Within a day, there was a petition signed by about 200 faculty.
That's because his feelings were hurt.
His feelings. Well, then Morris, when he saw what was happening, tried to apologize. He wanted to say, I didn't mean anything by it, no insult meant. I'm sorry. He wouldn't accept the apology. He wouldn't even respond to it. Well, you would think that Hugh Siegel, who was a red Tory and a former Canadian senator, would handle this with some dignity. No. He threw his fellow Jew under the Red Guard juggernaut.
Oh, no.
Let's see, what did he say here? In our eyes, the very... He completely disowned him. Siegel said that this was completely unacceptable, and against everything the college believes in, the university all got on into it too, and it said that it was. The remarks are absolutely incompatible with the University of Toronto's commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and with our goal of providing an environment for our students, faculty, and staff that is free of racism and other forms of discrimination. That came from Kelly Hannah Moffat, the UT's Vice President of Human Resources and Equity.
So no joking around, no jokes.
No joking around, and listen to what she said. The university is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion.
What?
Diversity and inclusion, but not for this professor. Anyway, that was, I think, on a Thursday. By Monday, he was a broken man. He said he got almost no support. He did a little bit later from a few columnists, but virtually no support. His fellow Jew and the master of the college booted him under the bus, and he said, all of my scholarship, he's a the title emeritus, it means, you know, it honors him for his life's work. All the work I did, all of my achievements, I've become a non-person, people won't talk to me, and he resigned.
Now, he can be remembered by this for the rest of his life. This could be the one thing he'd be most remembered by. It's so unfair. It's demonizing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, and it's a real parallel to what happened in Red China under Mao with the fanatical Red Guards. It didn't even make sense. I mean, I'm totally anti-communist, but you would think a man who'd been served with Mao and had been in the wars and all that, he's 50, 60 years old, he'd been a party member since he was 15, and then suddenly the young fanatics denounce him as a capitalist rotor or a CIA agent, reason doesn't play a part in it. It's just like you accuse, and that's it. There's nothing this Morris, Professor Morris, could have done. He apologized. He tried to apologize directly to the Negro in question, and it was as if it was just a complete disconnect. Nothing would do, but they were basically agitating for him to be thrown out. What Siegel should have done is something like this. Look, it may not have been the funniest joke in the world. He didn't mean to offend anybody. He's apologized. Let's move on.
Yeah, that's it. Just drop it at that. I guess the black fellow's feelings were hurt, and his feelings continue to be hurt, and they wouldn't speak to him again, so there's nothing he can do. His feelings are hurt.
That's right. And, what it means is it's all the more important for people like you and me, Brian, and others in the free speech movement to speak up, because we are living in a time of politically correct madness.
Yeah, I also think of it as compassion is aggression. They think they have compassion for this black fellow, so it's aggression. Also, the construction worker, there's so much fear from the top down that the company just fires them because they're so terrified. So that's compassion is aggression.
And most leadership has all the principles of a whore. At least the whore gives you some value for your money. Doesn't pretend to some higher morality. But to hear these people babbling about diversity, inclusion, and you wonder, this is a university in the last case. Don't you see a disconnect between what you're saying, inclusion, diversity, and excluding, firing, or throwing under the bus this guy? Anyway, we've got our work cut out for us. Ryan, you and I are hooked on freedom. And yes, we've got to hook a lot more people. Let's get high on freedom, because that's the proper measure of the dignity of man, not this miserable, cringing type of the individual who has to measure every word and dare not laugh, must not laugh.
Yeah.
It's a joyless society.
It is. Well, you really said it right. Thanks for the update, Paul, on these cases. This has been a very good talk. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, next time.
And that was my interview with Brian Rue. And
if you like the content, please like this video. Please subscribe and do the YouTube demonetization effort.
I'm going to take a short musical break now. And I'm going to play a tune I played a few times before. I think it's really good. I guess if I didn't, I wouldn't play it. And it's one of my new discoveries. A man by the name of Rebel Sun. And he writes and plays some really good pro-Confederate songs that make you proud. And this is Sitting Up Drinking with Robert E. Lee. This is Rebel Sun. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio. Thank you.
It was 2 o'clock a.m. and the fire was getting low. So I thanked him for our talk, cause it was time for me to go. While walking to my car, I turned to thank him once again. But the light was bare, there was nothing there but rotten dirt and sand. Was it my imagination playing with my head? I remember hearing clearly every single word he said. Every movement, every gesture, every tear that his heart shed. His dream is still alive, even though his body's dead. Robert E. Lee's memory lives on in the Southern soul. Along with his boys who fought and died out in the cold. Lee was a man with tons of courage, a hero without a doubt. He was a man with determination, he was a man from the South. And Robert E. Lee did not like them Northerners one bit. He was a rebel and he knew it, and he didn't give a shit. He said, son, I've got many stories to tell. Ulysses S. Grant, kiss my ass and go to hell. We've been talking about Dixie and how old times used to be. And I've been sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. Drink him up, bro.
Sitting Up Drinking with Robert E. Lee. Hope you like that. That's Rebel Sun. And I'm going to play one more tune here for the musical interlude.
I was just a little boy in elementary school. English and math and science class, learning the golden rule. I learned how to add and how to subtract, how to multiply and divide. I learned about bugs and I learned about plants and I learned how to read and write. But my most favorite class of all was my last class of the day, when my history teacher would tell us tales of old times long gone away. I was amazed at the way she knew all the people and their names and the places and the dates. That's when I first learned about General Lee and his 13 rebel states. One day she came to school with a big brown grocery bag. She opened it up, we all helped her hold up this great big egg-shaped flag. She said, class, now only a fool will tell you this flag is a symbol of hate. It represents the men who fought and died with pride for our Confederate states. Your assignment tonight, I want you to write, I want you to pretend that one of these brave men came back to life. Now what would you say to him? Well, the school bell rang and I thought, as the bus carried me across town. I got out my pencil and my notebook pad, and this is what I wrote down. I wrote, Mr. Confederate Man. sea land, Mr. Confederate man. The next day in history class, I put my paper on the teacher's desk. Then she called me up in front of everyone because she said she liked mine the best. As I walked up to the head of the class, my teacher smiled and she nodded at me. Then I saw a tear roll down her cheek as I began to read. I read, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man. Well, I was at home reading through the other day, when I ran across my old teacher's name and I saw where she had passed away. With a bittersweet smile, I looked up at my wall, a wrinkled paper in an old wood frame, where underneath pencil words almost faded away, she had marked a great big red A. Plus, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man. I rose, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man.
It's Rebel Son and Mr. Confederate Man. Like that song, hope you do too. I'm going to play one more tune in this musical interlude. This is Gene Watson and Rhonda Vincent, Nothing Sure Look Good on You.
Infrastructure is more than just construction.
With a flashy foreign car to drive and lots of time to kill. But Lord, my mind keeps on remembering the days of me and you, and when we were down to nothing, nothing sure looked good on you. You said you needed simple things that I had planned it all. And through the days of dark and lean, we could always live on love. But with his starlight, he lured you. When you honeymooned in Paris,
Was Gene Watson and Nothing Sure Looked Good on You. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Here's a story, kind of depressing, I've got to say. We have a uniquely unpopular premier in the province of Ontario, the lesbian Kathleen Wynne, who has imposed a wildly pro-homosexual degenerate sex ed program on our schools. She has wasted a king's ransom in new agey environmental change fighting nonsense, which has enriched some private corporations and beggared the Canadian the Ontario taxpayer. Now we'll soon be paying a carbon tax to punish ourselves. Well, you might think that it would be, there'll be an election probably next May. You might think, well, it'll be the opposition progressive conservative parties to win, and all things being equal, it would be. Except they've got an idiot as a leader. His name is Patrick Brown. Now, he got the leadership as a bit of an outsider. He beat an obscure federal member of parliament, ran for the provincial leadership. The establishment had its own chosen candidate, but he managed to corral the support of a fair number of social conservatives. In fact, he voted pro-life when he was in the federal, when he was in a backbencher in Ottawa. So many people had high hopes for him, but he's been in full retreat ever since. In fact, he's waffled on his, initially he opposed the sex ed curriculum, then he favored it, then he opposed it in a by-election, then he he retracted that again and said he favored it. On the carbon tax. Well, he doesn't agree with the lesbians' carbon tax, but he believes we should have one that's revenue neutral. Well, what about no tax at all? He says it's important that we fight climate change. Well, we might just as well fight the birds chirping or the sun rising in the east. We have absolutely nothing to do with it. Caused by sunspots. There's nothing that we know that can influence that at all. Pollution, yes. Climate change, or as it was called up until recently, global warming, nothing. Oh, and the social conservatives? Well, Patrick Brown now says he's all for abortion. Oh yeah, and he pranced in the gay pride parade. So disgusted are a fair number of social conservatives and real conservatives that they are gravitating towards several smaller dissident traditionalist parties, one of them being the Trillium Party, another one of them being the Freedom Party, and another one I believe it's the Family Action Party. Anyway, one of the things we have to impress upon these treacherous leaders is that if they do not please us, we will not vote for them. I know it's important to get rid of the lesbian. Yes, of course. But to replace the lesbian with leftist liberal white, not good enough. Brown says he's pro-choice, and more recently has led Pride Parade delegations. Any policy that attempts to limit a woman's right to choose or the ability of same-sex couples to marry are off-limits, period. Why? I mean, same-sex marriage is nonsense. Two people of the same sex want to have a partnership, want to agree to divvy up tasks, or they can agree to do anything that's not illegal. It's just not called a marriage. And recently, the government, the Liberal government, apparently hoping to trap the Conservatives, introduced legislation that would greatly expand the bubble zone around abortion clinics and abortion doctors and so on. Patrick Brown offered to support it immediately. The Liberals then didn't back off the legislation, but didn't want to go that fast. And party ads show clips of Brown repeating one of his often used lines that in the PC party, it doesn't matter who you love. Well, I think for many of us, it really does matter. He's not a conservative. That's the plain sad thing of it, and hopefully there will be some pushback and payback. They're not even allowed to discuss this at the Get This Conservative Policy Convention. What a joke. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. Shows repeated in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.